Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that has somehow learned how to speak across oceans, it's SIFPA. Welcome to SIF Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
What a wonderful day.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he still can't figure out how silly putty works. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week, and he's excited to be here. He's as excited to be here as Hugh Grant was to be in Tony the Tiger's suit. It's Ian Whittington.
I did just finish a run of a one-man 12 Angry Men show. Nice. Quite a coincidence.
Amazing. Those, of course, are some references to the movies we'll be talking about today. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which just came out in theaters, and Unfrosted, which just dropped on Netflix and is a huge hit. All the critics love it. I haven't heard a single negative thing about it. I'm excited to talk to you guys about both of these things. It's going to be a fun time. For our best ever challenge, we're doing one of our word challenges. We're going with best ever of the movies. Now, this is in honor of Alice, who isn't with us today, who specifically hates the Planet of the Apes movies because they have two of the's in them, and it makes her mad. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is the movie we're talking about today. So.
See, I misinterpreted this challenge as just best of the movies, so I just picked my favorite movies.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Well, you smart aleck, you. Thankfully, I do explain what the topics are in the email as well. Yes.
I didn't listen to the last time I was on the show because you didn't.
That's true. Well, sometimes things just happen. Let's just say that. So anyways, we're going to do that. And then, of course, we've got some buried treasure going on today as well. But let's get right into it. Oh, you know what? Before we get into it. I just want to stop now and just thank everybody for their well wishes as I'm going through this difficult time with Fall Guy underperforming at the box office. My Summer Sum Game picks are taking an early hit, and I appreciate the well wishes. That is very kind of you all to mourn with me the loss of my number five pick for the summer. So
it could have a long tail.
You know what? Elemental started with the same amount its first weekend and cracked the top 10. So, you know, it can happen, but we'll see. And I don't know. You know, it's interesting. This first week is interesting. Seeing what Planet of the Apes is kind of tracking for is interesting. It's, you know, it's going to be an interesting summer. I look forward to seeing how it kind of all shakes down. As we get into it, you can check all of that out at the website, sifpop.com. Click on Summer Sum Game. All right, let's get into the very first review. We will do Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Are you familiar with the concept of evolution? In their time, humans were capable of many great things. Noah! They could fly like eagles fly. They could speak across oceans. But now,
generations in the future following Caesar's reign, apes are now the dominant species and live harmoniously, while humans have been reduced to living in the shadows. As a new tyrannical ape leader builds his empire, one young ape undertakes a harrowing journey, or harrowing journey if you prefer, that will cause him to question all that he has known about the past and to make choices that will define a future for apes and humans alike. What did you guys think of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes? Andrew, why don't you go first? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I really liked it.
High side of liked it for Andrew. Ian, what do you think?
High side of liked it as well. Yeah, I think I'm in the same place. Yeah.
Yeah, we're all right there. I was going to say high side of liked it as well. Andrew, why don't you kick us off? What are some of the things you noticed with this movie?
Well, you know me, I always got to start with shout outs for performances. And in this one, my rose goes to Kevin Durand as Proximus Caesar. I think that Proximus Caesar is a fantastic villain. He doesn't have a lot of screen time. We're not really introduced to him until like halfway through the movie, but whenever we do get to meet him, he steals the show pretty much. It's fascinating because I love it when villains don't see themselves as the villains. And this is a villain who can really try and sell you on why he thinks everything he's doing is right. I don't fully understand all of his motivations, but as far as the characters, how he's written and performed, I think the Proximus definitely gets the biggest shout out from me.
Ian, some thoughts?
You stole my favorite point. It's my biggest pro and con with the movie is that the villain is believable as much as a villain in this situation can be. The motivations I get, I think his motivations are interesting. I think his plan is interesting. The con that I'll get to later is that it just takes too long to get to him, especially just considering how little time we have to enjoy him. It's like having Alan Rickman turn up just for a very small amount of time, say something awesome and leave. But my positives that aren't stealing from you is that this movie of probably... of all the Planet of the Apes movies since the first one, I always forget, is it Dawn or Rise?
That's Rise
is the first one.
Rise. This probably has the hardest job since Rise, because this has to introduce a new protagonist and somebody that we're going to be along with for the ride. We've got to buy into a brand new person after Andy Serkis's Caesar is so good. Like, you're literally replacing Caesar. Like, that's a really, really difficult job, and I think they absolutely nailed it with Noah and his two companions. Yeah, I think this movie lives and dies by that Noah performance, and yeah, I think the actor whose name shall be brought to me before I can... Yep, exactly, does a great job.
A voice from above shall now say this actor's name
right now.
Yeah, you could argue, Ian, to expand on your point, you could argue that this is a much more difficult job even than Rise had, because with Rise, you are launching the new material and you also are in a very familiar world, right?
Yes,
so
exactly.
It's, you know, we're kind of, we recognize this, and you have James Franco to, you know, do a lot of the connecting points. This movie is, and I agree, one of my favorite things about this movie is that it is in anthology type story within the franchise, and I love that. That's my favorite kind of franchise filmmaking, is when it's in the universe, you learn more, you need to learn more about the world building and what's going on, but it's not the same old characters. And not only that, they do a great job of nothing feels like an Easter egg or a cameo. Yeah. Like, any of the mentions of Caesar or any of the previous stuff makes complete sense in what we're talking about. And I think, you know, the movie makes complete sense on its own as a solo movie. It's like, if you had never seen a Planet of the Apes movie, if you have never seen one of the 372 Planet of the Apes movies, you would still understand this and understand kind of what's going on. Yeah. Now, I will transition to say one of the other reasons I really like this movie is because it is so consistent with the other 372 Planet of the Apes movies. Yes. There's a real beauty of this franchise sticking to its thematic work with technology and sociology. Those two things are prevalent in every Apes movie. I'm throwing the Tim Burton one to the side because I haven't seen it in a while. But I just watched all the old ones. They all deal with technology in some way. The idea that it's, you know, as we outsmart ourselves, we build stuff, you know, that's big enough to destroy us. And then our baser nature makes us use that stuff to, you know, destroy each other. And this one is right in that wheelhouse with what it's talking about and what it's doing. And yeah, there's just a lot of really interesting stuff going on here that I think is really, really cool.
Yeah, I was really amazed and impressed with how accessible the movie was, because I too have now consumed all of the Planet of the Apes movies that have ever existed in a very short amount of time, other than the Tim Burton one, which I'm told I don't need to watch. It's completely different to anything else that's going on. But I went into this thinking, yeah, I have so much apes knowledge. This is going to be, oh, I didn't need any of it. Okay. But it's great. That's such a positive. It is so kind to people that haven't seen a single apes movie and yet respectful of the lore that it's pulling from and the continuity from the circus movies. And that could be an even harder trick to pull off than setting the fourth movie in this new run quite far into the future and quite a few years after the trilogy has completed.
Mm.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the adding of a new element to the Apes franchise, and that's the bastardization of and actually militarization of religion that is introduced in this film with the character of Proxima Caesar, of changing the words of Caesar or, you know, exploiting the words of Caesar for his own benefit, and there's also Proximus is doing this, but also there's a character named Rocca who I absolutely loved in this movie. One of my favorite, by the way, he's Bordas in the Orville, if you didn't recognize his voice.
Hmm.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. The orangutan. Yeah. How they introduce this element of how over time words can be misconstrued, facts can be, you know, murky, and the way that religion is sometimes, I don't want to say created, but you know how religions can rise up from false pretenses and incorrect facts. And that's kind of what is going on in this movie. And the way that different characters deal with it, Noah, Proximus, Rocca, May even, it's just fascinating to see how people, I keep calling them people, which, you know, that's my biggest negative with this movie, by the way, is the people.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, before we get into that, and I do want to get into that, I do want to hear what you have to say about that. I think there is, I think you are absolutely right with the point that you're making. And there's an interesting thing that that this movie is doing with indoctrination that I found really, really interesting, because the idea of indoctrination, you know, with whatever faith it is, whatever belief it is that it allows for a strong leader to develop a cult, right? Like that's how indoctrination works, is it allows you to take something that people believe and say, well, if you believe it this much, then follow me and I'll show you what it really means. And, you know, and we will slay the monsters that are our enemies, you know, and, you know, it's, you see it all the time, especially in polarized societies like the one we live in now. And I think it speaks to something that's well worth speaking to right now with the moment that we're in. Yeah. I guess I will say one other thing before we get into kind of some negatives. No, let's do it. You had already mentioned it, so let's go to it, Andrew. Tell us about why you don't like the humans.
Well, I think that this movie could have been done without the humans.
Other than the fact that I couldn't tell if William H. Macy was a human or a monkey, because of the way they made him up, like they gave him monkey features, like they pinned his ears forward, and yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah,
it's called a beard, Aaron.
I think that the human element is the weakest aspect of this movie. I think that if they would have stuck to a retelling of Apocalypto, pretty much, I think that this movie would have been like way, way better. But I think because I don't see how the humans add anything to the movie. I don't see how May or Trevithan, what a name, by the way. I don't see how they add anything. Jarnathan, yeah. I swear to God, that's what I thought of every single time they said his name. I'm like, you mean Jarnathan? I don't see how they add anything to the movie.
Well,
if they do, then help me out here.
I think they do. I'm partially because that's what this whole franchise is about, is this idea of the sociology of race as it deals to species. And so the idea that, you know, and by the way, it's a really messy metaphor. I've had this conversation with many people, but the metaphor of applying the idea of, you know, a primate to primate species, overlaying that with the idea of interspecies race, is a very messy metaphor, but there's a lot of that happens here. And I think the idea of the humans in this one specifically is about their ability to, let's just say, apes together strong, has a little edit. It goes through a little evolution of its own that I think this movie is making a point about. And so without the humans, there's also a moment where one of the humans does something to another human, I'll just say that is a crucial moment for our protagonist to witness and will inform a lot, probably, if we see more of this character, about what happens with this character and how they feel about violence and the use of violence and those kind of things. And I think that is the purpose that they serve. They also serve a purpose, and this is another in the positive column for me, of kind of finding ways to keep the continuity of the old movies in these new movies.
Yes.
Which is really interesting because, and I don't want to give anything away, but the idea of what some of the humans we meet in this movie are about and are doing or whatever is a really interesting forerunner to what happens in the second Apes movie. And thinking of, like, you know, this idea of...
you're talking about the second original Apes movie.
Yes, yes. Like, yes, 70 or whenever it was. but yeah, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So I love that they're keeping, like, the idea that these really do exist in the same world as the old ones is really interesting to me. So, yeah. But anyhow, I think, I don't know if that completely solves your issue, but it's kind of what I saw with the human characters and who they are. Mm.
There was lots of moments. And if we do a spoiler chat on this one, I'll talk about it more. But there was lots of things that were setting off my little radar of, oh, this could be really smart. Like, if this continues into its own trilogy, and this is the direction they take it, this could be really, really special. In terms of the human stuff, I 50% agree with you, Andrew. Some of the humans were frustrating to me, but Nova/May is, I think, so important to this story in particular, and I loved how they handled her. It wasn't the standard human sympathizes with apes, ape sympathize with human. This human is very much at odds with every ape she's coming into contact with, and well, dipping into any spoilers, it's an interesting dynamic that she has in relation to all of the primates that she's working with. And I just, if I get out of philosophical brain and into just watching popcorn and eating a movie, she's a great instigator for just driving the story forward and turning this into a Mission Impossible film.
You mentioned Rocco, which I think is another point along the like consistency with the continuity of the universe that we know so far through all of the movies, again, setting the Tim Burton one aside, is that this movie, as so many of the others do, really have this interesting distinction of the interspecies with these primates too. Like the orangutans are always the philosophers.
Yes.
Always. Uh-huh. The gorillas are always the warriors. They're always the warriors. And so it's, you know, it's interesting that they continue. I think it's one of the messiest parts of the metaphor, if I'm being honest. You don't want to think about it too much, like what that means, but like the,
you could go down a dark rabbit hole that really quick. Don't do that.
But it's interesting that they continue, you know, they needed a philosophical character, and so it was an orangutan, you know, it's just kind of shorthand for the franchise. But yeah, it was, and I continue to love how his window has become, you know, the cross for the Caesarites, you know,
like so
it's really, really interesting. I will say for my main negative, I think Ian, you already alluded to it. I think this movie takes a little bit to get moving. I think it really picks up steam in the final act and you can feel the difference. That's okay. I don't mind hanging out with the movie for a little bit if I'm interested in what it's teaching me and about the characters and that kind of stuff. But there were a few times, early on where, it felt a little bit too contemplative to me. But it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It's just, you know, one of those minor negatives.
Yeah.
Ian, you really, felt the really same way with that?
I almost didn't want to mention it because as soon as I started to edge into where are we going? What's the direction here? It would find a direction for me and it would kick in. So it was just on the edge for me. I think what was a bit jarring for me was the shift from one villain that you're focused on into the villain. So I've put a lot of energy into this one particular villain that's instigating a lot of nastiness. And then like halfway, two thirds into the movie, I'm pivoting to another person that is now getting all of my attention. And I think even though this movie is 2.5 hours long, I think that's a lot to try and pull off with a story like this.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a 2.5 hour movie. I didn't feel it.
No, I did at
the beginning. I honestly did at the beginning. I think there's a lot of that stuff that could have gotten us into it a little bit quicker.
I disagree with that because I think that if we don't have that slower build in the beginning, then we don't care about Noah as much as we do.
I think you could possibly be right. I just think there may be ways to accomplish the same thing and cut out a little bit of the excess.
We just care about animals more than you, clearly, Andrew.
And if I can be honest, I actually think it's the action set pieces that beef it up a little bit too much. Like, I didn't need so much of that original attack. There are two moments in that, maybe three, that needed to happen, and I didn't need the whole like 15-minute, you know, siege in that first action set piece. I needed the first climbing set piece. That's perfect. I love the opening to this movie.
That's really smart.
But that I feel like we could have gotten the emotional work done in that to propel us through a siege where a couple of big moments happen for our protagonist that propel him on. It's just a lot of fisticuffs. I don't know. I'm tired of that. Like, it could have happened faster. I'm
tired of this monkey fighting.
Yes.
You briefly mentioned... Oh, go ahead, Ian.
No, I was relieved that there was less of the monkey fighting at the end. There's some of it, but these things tend to feel the need to come up into this big climax. This movie has a terrible trailer, by the way. I say this every time I come on the show. I should stop watching trailers. This trailer paints a terrible picture of this movie. And I was trepidatious, especially with how the last third was going to go. I was like, they're going to feel the need to do some big battle fight scene to top it off based on the structure of the trailer. And I was so relieved that it's more refined with its climax is what I'll say.
It's smarter for
sure. The trailer.
Are we ready for one last thing?
Sure. What's your one last thing?
My one last thing is I will never get tired of looking at overgrown concrete jungles. Yes. Like seeing a cityscape that is just overgrown with foliage and, you know, this urban thing. It just looks so cool. You know, it reminds me of like The Last of Us or any of these games that take place. What's the Horizon Zero Dawn, you know? Mm. How it's just all overgrown cities and like nature reclaiming. It just looks so cool. It's a very it's a very beautiful movie.
I was immediately trying to do the math on, okay, when does that mean we are? Like, how much could have grown? And can I extrapolate what century we're in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's interesting with some of the things you learn in this movie to think, well, what does many generations mean then?
Oh, so annoying. Yeah. I want more. I want to know. Give me a year.
Less punching, more information.
Yes.
Ian, do you have one last thing?
Yeah, I'm a little bit frustrated with the what was the word I was looking for? The undefined ending. It's a little bit, I don't want everything tied up in a bow, but I wanted a little bit less sequel.
It's definitely sequel baiting for sure.
It's and in a frustrating way for me.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mind it this time, simply because it made me excited. Yeah, it made me excited to figure out where they want to go with what they're playing with. Because
I already have that. Yeah. I think that might be the difference. I already had that from the movie. I didn't need some extra. Look at what we're doing.
I don't know.
In the last couple minutes.
Let's just say if Noah is the protagonist of this movie, I think that May is the protagonist of the next movie, and I think that makes it a different experience in that way. So
could be.
Yeah. My one last thing is vengeance. The driving force that is vengeance is really interesting to me and becoming more and more distasteful to me. I totally get why people love that idea. I totally get the idea of loving justice, this thing in us that wants the wrongs to be made right. But I don't know. I just wish there were more ways to motivate protagonists' journeys than, you know, I don't want to spoil anything in this movie, but the idea of vengeance for something that has happened, you know, because by the time our protagonist flips the bird to the villain, it is well understood, you know, what the driving force is. Yeah. So anyway,
Aaron, Noah was too young to have had a little child and to have it disappear and go away and end up in a dentist's room somewhere.
Fair enough. All right. That is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And we'll see what the next one, how many of those are in the next one. Let's move on to our next review. It is a Netflix movie from Jerry Seinfeld called Unfrosted.
In the early 1960s, the American morning was defined by milk and cereal. And the two undisputed giants of the cereal world were Kellogg's and Post.
Major news from the breakfast world. The Post Cereal Company has reportedly invented a shelf-stable fruit pastry breakfast product.
No.
Yeah.
Boy.
It's Post. They did it.
I'm about to find Uncrushed, that big red K that never stops glaring at me. How do you think Post did it?
There's always a surprise inside the box.
I'm just going to use xanthan gum.
Xanthan.
Unfrosted is in a time when milk and cereal ruled breakfast, and then a fierce corporate battle begins over a revolutionary new pastry. This is a pet project of Jerry Seinfeld, and he using apparently all the weight and power he has made sure that every single person in the universe was in this movie. I will not list them for you now. What did you guys think of On Frosted? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian, kick us off.
Yeah, I won't be saying anything too revolutionary. I didn't like it.
I
hated it. I just did not like it.
All right. Andrew.
Well, I hated it.
You guys are not alone in that feeling, and I totally get it. I, however, thought this movie was okay. And I will say...
That's why you loved it.
Exactly. I will say, by the end of this review that we're doing together, you'll think I want it to win Oscars, because that's how bad people think this movie is, that me going, it's okay, means that it's amazing. It is not an amazing movie by any stretch of the imagination. But I had a good time, guys. I had fun. I laughed occasionally. I think Jerry Seinfeld's sense of humor is interesting to me because it's observational in a way that the execution, though, what's the word I'm looking for? Stodgy and, stationary in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinkers. There's a lot of thinker jokes in this that are really interesting to me. I'm going to spoil just a couple of them, or maybe just one of them. Maybe I'll just spoil one of them. There is a serial mascot January 6th in this movie.
Yes, it's my biggest con of the movie.
And I thought about that forever. And I was just like, I think that's really smart.
I think it's really
very
dumb.
Tasteless.
Yeah, I thought it was completely tasteless. I thought it was so on the nose and so obvious this was what he was trying to do. It got me really annoyed, and I don't know if that's the point. And maybe that's okay that I'm annoyed with it, but it didn't feel like something we're quite ready to be making light of yet.
I see. I don't know. I have this beautiful relationship where I think humor is a way into things that we should be making fun of, that we should be like, lampooning because of how ridiculous it is. Now, I get the idea, like even the phrase making fun has this idea of, making light or, I didn't laugh during that section. I just thought like, wow, this is a great satirical way to make this point. And so, I don't know. I know I'm in the minority on this, by the way. So, but the movie did that several times to me.
I just don't know what point was being made. And so if I would have known what point was being made in that segment, not to hark on this one segment of the movie because...
Sure. Because there's plenty of things to hark on. Exactly. There are plenty of other places to go.
Yeah, hold on to your bootstraps. Here we go. No, it felt like, yeah, you're making fun of Jan 6th, but I don't know what purpose it's serving other than you just wanted to use January 6th so you could make fun of it. Like, there's no higher element of comedy for me in that I saw.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. For me, the idea of making fun of it is the point. Like the idea of going, and again, making fun in the sense of pointing out, how silly, how ridiculous, it's, I don't know. It's one of those things I was happy to see. So, yeah.
I'm also not buying Hugh Grant. I'm not buying his shtick of I'm doing this just for money now, because he's intentionally taking these roles where it's painting him in a bad light. So I think he's doing it on purpose. So every single time he says I'm doing this just for my kids now, I'm not buying it. I'm on to you, Hugh.
I am curious. Do you guys have anything good to say about this movie?
I was kind of on board for the first, I'm going to say like 10, 15 minutes. I was getting this like kind of Wes Anderson-y vibe almost from some of like the shot compositions. And there was a moment when some kids are in a skip, hang on, you guys don't call it a skip. Dumpster?
Trash can.
Dumpster. They're in a thing. And the way the camera just kind of follows the journey of this dumpster and where it ends up, I was like, that's fun. And then it wasn't quite Wes Anderson enough. And I kind of wanted this movie to be goofier and more in its own universe. So my positive was quickly turned into a negative because it kind of got really stilted and like kind of stopped for some Jerry Seinfeld stand-up routines and then get back into the story. And it needed to go all the way into the stupid. And the cameos actually work for me, but less of the cameos and more of the ridiculousness of this serial war that's happening.
You wanted more ridiculousness?
Yeah, I wanted more ridiculous. Yeah, this wasn't enough.
That seemed pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not on board with that. They called this a biopic, and I just thought of a joke. Huh? B-U-Y-O-pic. The movie wants to make you buy Pop-Tarts. Get it?
Yep, yeah.
I'm clever. Anyway, it just felt for me like it was Jerry Seinfeld getting a bunch of his people together and saying, hey, I need you to be in this scene and be funny. I need you to be in this scene and be funny. And it didn't push any narrative forward. That's what's missing from this movie is a clear through narrative. Like if I get the idea of it's Post and Kellogg's racing against each other to create the breakfast treat that became Pop-Tarts. But it just nothing about the story. If there wasn't even a story for me, I'm just very frustrated with this movie. I can't even get a clear thought through my head to critique this movie because I'm just so frustrated with it.
Well, there are many times on this show that my overthinking brain will take something that is silly, ridiculous, and has no point and find deep meaning in it to get me through my day. And this is an example of that not happening. I don't know what this is about. I mean, other than it's a satirical take at corporate greed, right? Like the idea of all of these new types of, docudramas that we're getting about, corporations and that it's, pointing a finger at the ridiculousness of humanity's need to win. But no, there's not a lot there. For me, I will tell you when I was able to zone into it was when I was thinking of it like UHF, when I was thinking of it like a Weird Al type movie where the satire is the thing. And you're just supposed to kind of go along with the absolutely ridiculous over the top Rambo parody or whatever it might be. So yeah, that's where I was able to kind of zone in and just kind of go, I think that's kind of clever. I thought the Madman section was really clever.
I did laugh at that part.
There were just many times I just was like, oh, that was, it's really interesting to me. The idea of these characters from like 50s, 60s America, like late 50s, early 60s America that nobody under the age of such and such would have, like Jack LaLanne and like, all these people that that are based on real people. And it's just like, I don't know. It made me laugh. So occasionally.
Yep.
So like I said, it's the best movie ever.
Yeah. So in Seinfeld, the show, Jerry Seinfeld surrounded himself with great comedic actors to make himself look better.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, he's surrounding himself with the same amount of mediocrity as himself in his acting, to where he just kind of blends in with everywhere. And that is not a recipe for success.
Did you just call all the cameos in this mediocre?
For me,
Melissa McCarthy has been nominated for awards. Like, what are we talking about here?
Performance was mediocre. Everybody in this was mediocre.
I thought Bill Burr
was great. I hated this movie, Aaron. I hated it a lot.
Weirdly, the only thing I could keep thinking as I went through the movie, not enjoying Jerry Seinfeld, was that the cameos were the only part of the movie that worked. And usually the cameos are the thing that like hold it back and are just like a bit gimmicky. For me, to steal some parlance from the kids, everyone seemed to understand the assignment and what they were supposed to be doing. Hugh Grant nails every line delivery, every like disdain that's coming out of his body is absolutely perfect. The little exchange he has with Melissa McCarthy's character is gold. It's so, so good. Christian Slater fully commits. Like you said, this is my favorite Bill Burr performance, hands down by a country mile. So, so good. It took me a minute to realize it was even him. But I think it kind of works. I think the cameos kind of elevate the movie from turd to watchable turd.
I'm probably more in line with you, Ian. Like, I think that's kind of where I'm at, too. You know, like, I thought the Christian Slater stuff was really funny. I thought leading to the Peter Dinklage stuff through the Christian Slater stuff was funny. You know, I don't know. It's just there's something about a movie just being so off the rails and willing just to go wherever that I kind of lose my mind a little bit and just, you know, enjoy going with them wherever they want to go. Go ahead, Andrew. Say all the mean things about this movie that you've been holding back.
Oh, I haven't held anything back. I've pretty much said anything. The problem is it's hard to say anything positive about a movie because I can actually feel my brain trying to erase this movie from my memory as it's happening right now. Honestly, I'd rather watch Madam Web.
Not even close. Not even close. If you put the two in front of me, I would absolutely watch this again. And probably pick up some jokes that I missed, which I think was kind of part of the fun of these kind of movies.
So I'm going to let you two talk because
we don't need to talk much more about this movie. You know, I'm already on the record and video and audio form of being pro making light of January 6th. So I don't need to dig a hole any further than I've already dug during this podcast.
All eyes on you during next year.
that's right. I think we'll just go ahead and do one last thing if you have anything else. Ian, did you have anything else about this that you wanted to talk about?
For me, the cameos that weren't welcome were was the reference fest, and maybe that's because I'm English and maybe it's because I'm young, but that's what for me like threw the brakes on a lot and took me out of this wacky world is when they suddenly hold up a newspaper and say, "Vietnam, that sounds like a stellar idea. Let's do that." And it's like, yeah, we get it. Vietnam was bad. Great, great joke.
Sure.
And that's where like it felt like really bad stand-up. Where it's like, are you trying to have some more like mass appeal? Just be stupid. Just be more silly with it. It felt like this page needs another joke. Let's stick another joke on this page.
I will say I think the trap pop moment got me the most. Like, it was so unexpected that it kind of nailed me. And then the way they reversed it, I didn't see coming either.
It was a long road to get to that punchline. Yes, it's kind of fun. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
There are just some things in here that did make me smile. But no, it's not good. I don't know. I had something I wanted to talk about for my one last thing. I would just say this. I put this on my Letterboxd review, which follow me on Letterboxd. It's basically the only social media platform I'm active on at all these days.
Me too.
but I in that review I said something along the lines of this movie was empty calories, kind of bland, occasionally tasty, and somehow I enjoyed it anyway. If only there were some sort of metaphor of something that exists in the world that would be like this movie, because I do. Finally. I think this movie is a Pop-Tart. Take that for whatever it's worth, whatever you feel about Pop-Tarts. They are junk food in breakfast form, and yet somehow I always enjoy chomping on one. So So that's kind of how this movie felt a little bit for me.
So what you're saying is that a Matrix 4 happened and he deliberately made a bad movie? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so. I don't think the Pop-Tart people are deliberately making, you know, bad food either. You know what I mean? Like they are willing to put up with the shortcomings of their pastry, knowing that it's enjoyable anyway. Lowest common denominator. That's this, you know, kind of the stuff.
Yeah.
That is Unfrosted. Andrew, did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to get in there before we move on?
No post-credit scene.
Can't wait. Can't wait for the sequel.
Oh, was it really Apes? I didn't hang around for the end credits of Apes. I'm guessing there wasn't post-credit scene.
I didn't either. So if there was, I missed it. 2.5 hours is about as much as my bladder can take. Oh, so
in Kingdom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a roar. That was about it.
All right.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Godzilla's turning up. Nice.
All right, let's get to the best ever challenge. But before we do, a big thank you again to our amazing SIFBOT members. Thank you for supporting what goes on here. We appreciate you. And if you want to do that, go to Patreon. Patreon.com/SIFBOT would be the place to go.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we're going to do our top five of the movies. And these are movies with the word
Back to the Future
of the in the title. So we'll go number to five, number the five to number of the one. And we will
Trump
it if we have it higher than the person who's mentioning it, so we can talk about it at its highest spot. I'll kick us off. This was a really interesting exercise for me. Lots more than I expected. And lots of big awards contenders.
Yes.
Of the in the title. Mm. Like it's like some sort of grandiose thing, I guess, or whatever.
I didn't even make it out of my top 200 movies.
Oh no, I didn't make it out of my top. Well, no, I did make it out of my top 100. This first one I'm going to mention, I think, is in like the 120 range for me, somewhere in that range.
Yes.
That would be Guardians of the Galaxy. I have at number five.
Honorable mention.
Same.
Yeah. This movie's so good. I enjoy all of the Guardians movies, but I enjoy this one the most. And it was such a surprise when it happened, too. It was the movie in my mind that stamped Marvel's ability at that point in time just to throw any piece of spaghetti at the wall and it would stick no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just the level of difficulty to introduce these characters to the public and to make it work like they did. No, in no small part, thanks to James Gunn and his envision of the quirkiness of what goes on here. But yeah, I really enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy. It is my number five. Andrew, what is your number five?
I'm going to go with Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Good choice. Yeah. Good choice.
Honorable mention again.
It is it's in my top five Star Wars movies. I adore this movie so much. I love Ewoks. I love everything about it. The the finale between Luke and Vader is like one of the most emotional moments in the entire Star Wars franchise, because it's the culmination of everything, really, right there. The prequels, the sequels, that's the culmination right there. So, yep. Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi. Ian, what is your number five?
It's Wrath of the Khan. No, it's not.
Amazing.
It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. This. Okay. Moving on
to my number four, which is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, it's great stuff. Is it my favorite Indiana Jones movie? No, it's actually not. But it's still amazing. There's a reason that series was awesome. And it is not, just so we're clear, the name of the movie is not Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. The name of this movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark. I just want to make sure people understand.
Of course. And it's the most important thing about the movie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like Star Wars is Star Wars. Quit adding things to your titles.
It's Sorry. Not. It's A New Hope.
Anyhow, Ian, what are some of your thoughts on Raiders?
Oh, I love that. It's weird, but it just beats the Star Wars franchise for me, because this was like Return of the Jedi, or this was going to be my number five. But I just have more fun with it, honestly. If I have the two in front of me, I'm going with this. I think it's better written. It's more fun. I think it's a more cohesive adventure that you can just sit down and watch. And yeah, Harrison Ford, man, what are you going to do?
Yeah. All right. So, Andrew, what is your number four?
I'm going to go with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, good one.
Ian, what is your number four?
This is going to upset you, Aaron, on a very interesting level. This is Flight of the Phoenix, 1965. The reason it's going to upset you is because a while ago, we did a Jimmy Stewart run of movies. And I was like, man, I can't believe I've never seen Jimmy Stewart in a movie before. I just completely forgot that he's in one of my favorite movies. Just because I haven't seen it in a long time, Flight of the Phoenix. He is so good now that I remember him in this movie. This is one of my favorite stuck in a place, let's get out of here movies. It's so, so good. It has an incredible cast. I believe all of the dilemmas that they're going through. Everyone brings a different thing to the being trapped on a desert island-ness of the whole thing. And this has one of the most incredible climaxes to a Let's Get Out of Here movie I've ever experienced. You always want them to, like, you know, just make a new plane and get it going. This is the movie for you. It's so, so good. The tension at the very end is incredible. I love this movie so much.
Just to be clear, we're talking about the 1965 Flight of the Phoenix, opposed to the 2004 Flight of the Phoenix starring Tyrese Gibson and Dennis Quaid,
which is serviceable. It's not bad. It's just not the original.
All right, on to our number threes. I will kick us off with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Hey,
nice.
I have this at number three. I rewatched this very recently, and it more than holds up. This movie is astonishingly structured. I am so impressed with the way this movie lays out what it's doing and how it does it. Jim Carrey is and Kate Winslet are both absolutely astonishing in it. This is a solid movie. I have arguments with friends about whether this movie is hopeful or nihilistic. And the true answer is probably, can it be both? I land on the end of this movie offering a little bit of a glimmer of hope with the idea it's presenting. It is a tough watch in many ways, but I think it's a worthwhile thinker to sink your teeth into. Andrew, you had this at number four?
Surely did. I think it's probably the best dark romance that's ever been written. It's so real, yet so fantastical. It's it's just a great movie, and I think this is Jim Carrey's best performance. I know a lot of people would say Man on the Moon. For me, it's this one. It's just, they're both great performances, don't get me wrong, but this one just hit me.
Yep. All right, Andrew, what is your number three?
Silence of the Lambs.
Trump!
Trump! I have not, I've only been Trump so far. I don't know how this is happening.
Amazing. Your number five got trumped?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Return of the Jedi didn't, did
don't,
it?
Don't you claim, don't you claim trauma that isn't yours. True. Okay, Ian, what is your number three?
Mine is Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, good choice. Am I on Trump? Vengeance? Okay,
there we go. I've only been trumped all of my arms.
Yeah, it's true. 100% true for Ian. The that brings us on to our number twos, which I don't think I have much danger of this being trumped at all by either of you. My number two is The Passion of the Christ. I have this at number two. Much has been made of Mel Gibson's fascination with violence, and it certainly is a interesting choice to tell the story of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ as a graphically violent tale. And I think it's a choice that kind of defines how you will feel about this movie. And I think for me, this movie continues to speak to my faith in really powerful ways. I think what Gibson was doing here is really interesting, considering the idea of the violence that we cause to beliefs that are pure, the idea of how we pervert things that are in the realm of good thoughts. We take, like for the move, like from Planet of the Apes, you know, we take them and we make them our own to do violence to. And it's just there are very few people of outspoken peace who exist in this world that don't end up paying a price for it. And that is unfortunate. So the way this movie speaks to that is always very, very interesting to me and very meaningful to me. So Passion of the Christ is my number two. Andrew, what is your number two?
Shaun of the Dead.
Hey.
It's a goodie. First half of this movie's hilarious. Second half's not so much.
I would argue.
I don't agree with that even assessment funnier. At all. Nope. I think the entire movie is hilarious, and the entire movie is a zombie movie.
I think that final scene Shaun of the Dead because that second half gets dark and real
and hilarious.
And hilarious. Yep. He's playing PlayStation in a shed with his best buddy, who is dead.
Okay, fine. Yeah, the very, very end of this movie, the levity returns.
All right, we're going to watch Shaun of the Dead together, and I'm going to dare you not to laugh during the second half of this movie, because it is so queen, funny.
Don't stop
Little
me now.
Little does Aaron know this was just a ploy for me to watch Shaun of the Dead with
that's
him.
Right, that's right.
Make an outrageous claim.
It is amazing, though. Barely missed my top five. Ian, you had it on your list too, right?
Oh, yeah. It's so good. This, when I rewatch this over and over and over again, and I tend to watch it once a year, for me, this has, I think, the most functionally necessary one shot that I've ever seen. Like, sometimes one shots can be a little bit gimmicky. The two one shots in this film stinking good. Yeah, when he has his journey from the house to the corner shop.
Yeah.
So meticulously plotted and planned out. It's so, so good. Just to pick on one thing that that stands out each time. But yeah. Hilarious, beautifully timed, such a great send up of the genre.
All right, Ian, I think we're to your number two then.
Yes, this is where I had the Silence of the Lambs.
Hey.
Very nice.
Did I trump somebody?
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you. Yeah. I like this movie. It's good. Gets better every time I watch it. It's great. Anthony Hopkins is amazing. As is Jodie Foster. Yep.
I was just going to let him linger there.
Just let me get there.
He was inventing a really beautiful song, so I should have just let him go.
I couldn't get Jodie Comer's name out of my head. I was like, it's definitely the wrong Jodie.
Yeah, I understand that. But I totally get that.
suspenseful, incredible. It's probably the definition of, hey, the bad guy isn't in this movie much. Why is it so great? I think this movie kind of defines that. It's so, so, so good. And I love a good murder mystery.
It's very good. Andrew, you had it at number
three.
So why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Clarice Starling is one of my favorite characters in all of cinema, I guess, because she is small of stature, but big of willpower. And the determination she has in this movie is, and the brain, she's so smart and clever. Now, Anthony Hopkins' character, Hannibal Lecter, can, you know, walk circles around here with her whenever it's just the two of them. But I think he's just on a different level. I think that Clarice is obviously way more level-headed. And yeah, I think it's just a great movie.
There you go. Yep, definitely my honorable mentions. All right, on to our number ones.
What could it be?
Whatever could it be? I have Lord of the Rings at number one.
Same.
Yeah, me too. The Return of the King. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you can pick a movie if you like. It is common practice on SIFPOP just to consider the first trilogy as a single entity. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. It's such an interesting touchstone in my movie fandom because it's the first like real movie world that I got invested in as an adult. You know, like Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Back to the Future, that stuff happened when I was a kid. And so to have Lord of the Rings come along and just the whole excitement surrounding the movies was a great experience. The extended editions were amazing. Mm-hmm. The supplemental material, it's just a really great, great thing that Peter Jackson and the people at Weta did. So yeah, Lord of the Rings.
The tie-in books are great.
Yeah, they wrote novels based on these movies that you should check out.
I'm reading them right now, actually.
Yeah, for the first time.
First time.
Oh, interesting. These actually are books I have read. They're among the very few. Yeah.
I love these movies so much. This was my Harry Potter, and they came out at a similar sort of time. They were kind of like battling each other at the theater, and Harry Potter wasn't my thing, but Lord of the Rings, I have a battered up copy that I'm touching right now that was gifted to me by my dad. I read it far too young, didn't understand a word that was on the page. But when the movies came out, I was like, oh, this is my thing. This is great. So yeah, huge, huge connection point. I struggle to think of a more perfectly executed trilogy. And I go to the Two Towers like so often just as a movie to watch on its own because it's such a great action movie just in its own right. Yeah, it's just an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
More, please.
Totally agree.
All righty. That is our top five. What did the gurus have to say with the movies?
Yeah. So at number three, we have Guardians of the Galaxy. So you're getting some love there, Aaron. Number two, Lord of the Rings. That means number one is Silence of the Lambs.
There you go.
Yep.
All righty. Honorable mentions. There's lots to be able to throw out. I'm going to run through some. If you have some others, you can certainly throw them out. I kind of limited it to ones that I think are really great films. Remains of the Day, War of the Worlds, Power of the Dog, Legends of the Fall, Society of the Snow is a recent one.
I think it's worth
mentioning. Killers of the Flower Moon, another recent one, probably worth mentioning. And then I also had the other Planet of the Apes movies in there as well. The more recent ones, Rise of the Planet of the Apes is the one I had on my list. But what other ones did you guys want to throw out there?
I'll go through my list real quick. Pirates of the Caribbean: Curse of the Black Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Grave of the Fireflies, and the Planet of the Apes movie I would throw out there is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That's my favorite.
Yep. Ian, did you have any others?
Yeah, you guys mentioned a lot of mine. So I've got all of The President's Men. That's one that I would definitely throw into the mix. Anatomy of the Fall, It's a great one. And Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, I think.
I think Anatomy of a Fall is technically
Anatomy of the Fall. It's also not all of the President's Men either.
Skoklego says Lala of the Land. Yeah, yes. That's a great choice as well. I should have thought of that one. Quiz of the Show. Yeah, there's a lot of great titles. All right, let's finish off with some buried treasure, guys. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about? Ian, you're our guest, so you will go last. Andrew, why don't you kick us off?
May the 4th was just around, just past us not too long ago, and we've been talking about, Star Wars a lot today. I just recently saw a documentary the other day called Empire of Dreams. This came out a while ago. I think it came out back in 2004, right around the time that the prequel trilogy was about to be made. This documentary tells the story of how Star Wars came to be, how George Lucas thought it all up, and it talks about the first three movies, so 4 through 6. And it's just fascinating to see how this came to be and like how crunched for time they were and how the studio was like, hey, if you don't stop, production soon, we're going to be out of business. So they were really tight on their budget and then really tight on time. So it's a really interesting watch. You should check it out.
Empire of Dreams, streaming on Disney Plus, if you want to check that out.
The irony that that isn't subtitled A Star Wars Story.
Yeah, fair enough. My buried treasure is a movie called Snake Eyes that I recently saw from 1998 with Nicolas Cage and Gary Sinise. And this is De Palma, and it has a lot of the De Palma hallmarks, but is a lot of fun, quirky, over-the-topness that's going on in this. And starts with an incredible oneer, has an interesting Rashomon-style telling of the story where we get different characters' perspectives that give us different information. The ending isn't the strongest part of the movie, but it resolves just fine for me. I had a good time with Snake Eyes, so I wanted to mention it because I hadn't checked that out before.
So you chose the stupid way, didn't you, Cyrus?
Yes, exactly. Ian, what is your buried treasure?
Yeah, we email our choices ahead of time to lovely Phil, and I said, I know that Aaron picked Snake Eyes, so I won't be able to pick that. So instead, I'll pick Halo. This is the Halo TV show that I could be way off the mark here. Andrew, you might be able to tell me more, but I feel like this has been almost completely ignored and just, I don't feel like anyone's talking about it. I don't think it's really had much buzz at all. My expectations were super duper low going in. Big, big fan of the games. They were my introduction to next gen at the time gaming. I had a big gap from the PlayStation 1 and then had nothing up until the Xbox 360, I think. And yeah, so huge fan of the games. My expectations were super low with this because I was expecting some video game kind of gimmickry and stuff like that and a lot of fan service. Episode 1, the pilot, has a bit of that. But then from episode 2 onwards, and basically the finale of episode 1, it's really clear that they're shifting gears into their own narrative, their own story. And it is a really compelling story. Like, we're not talking about Game of Thrones levels or whatever, but within its own universe, it's so, so good. It has these really clear characters, clear motivations, a really cool story, and kind of scavenger hunt type quest that is the through line for season 1. And the caliber of people that are acting in this show is super high. It's so, so good. And they're dealing with complex things like being a soldier, kids that are forced into war, and that's the only life that they know, and then what choice do they have when they grow up, and their commitment to fighting a greater evil. I just didn't expect this from a video game TV show, and while Fallout is getting a ton of love, I think Halo is getting a little bit, and deservedly so, I think Halo is getting a little bit overlooked.
Yeah, kind of came and went real fast.
Two seasons of it. There's a second season that's happened already.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting stuff. That is Halo, which is available on Paramount Plus. Oh, that explains it. Never mind. Yeah.
Asked and answered.
Yeah, I get it now. Snake Eyes is available on Amazon Prime. And Empire of Dreams is streaming on Disney Plus if you want to check that out. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast. Woo! So
yeah, we did.
Congratulations to all those who participated. Podcasters together strong. Appreciate you guys being a part of it. Thank you for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks, Andrew, for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil!
And Ian Whittington coming through in the clutch again. Ian, where do you want to send people to see your stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually getting a bit more active on Letterboxd now because it's what the cool kids are doing. And I have logged every single film that I've watched this year. I was like sporadic last year. And when I got to January, I was like, well, now I'm going to do it. So every single film that I watch, I am being really, really vigilant. I don't always put a review in, but I'm being really vigilant about my curve and expanding my curve and getting it to mean something to me. So yeah, I'm just Ian Whittington on there. And of course, you can find me on Captain's Pod. Wherever you get podcasts and stuff, we're doing Discovery Season 5, the final throes of Discovery with Danae, who hasn't watched a single episode of Discovery, and we just threw her into Season 5, and I have to explain a lot of Star Trek that I don't remember.
There you go. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members as well for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check all that out at patreon.com/sifpop. You can also leave comments, ratings, reviews, wherever you listen, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever that might be. You can also email us, feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than slamming a rusty aluminum pole into solid rock. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about If and Furiosa. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.